The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
You are listening to Crotolo Chronicles.
Wake up. It's night. No matter what time of day, it's night. And here comes the godfather of internet radio, the bard of the broadcasting. I'm the third man, and I am not the difficult historian. I'm the man who gets into your mind through your ears and your nostrils and stays in that head for hours after the show. Heather Drain will be here. So you had better stay by on this Y2K plus 17. From ice cap to ice cap, from Hamlet to City, from Othello, and into every bordello. We're also going to Barnes. We also go into Nobles. We're going to Barnes and Nobles. We also go into Bed Bath and beyond. We go beyond the Bed Bath. We even go Bed Bath and Beyonds. That's the way it should be called, so that they can really get hit, but people don't really want to do that. And certain things that are standard, you know, I mean, my name is Frank Cotolo, man whose name adorns the title of the show. Now, if all things go correctly, and I've been hawking this, and I've been tweeting it, and I've been Facebooking it, oh, man, that place is really not worth a lot of time anymore. But I've been doing all over the place, telling everyone Heather Drain will be here tonight. I told you last week when we did the show, and I'm talking about it again right now because I'm very happy, and I have a surprise for her, as well as she will have many surprises for us when she talks to us about the things. She talked to pop culture, the first lady of pop culture classique, Miss Heather Drain. Mando Heather, my home. No, I know, I'm just filling time. My name is Frank Catolo, man, whose name adorns the title of the show. I'll tell you why. I'm going to tell you why. When I'm involved with a project that is big, now when I say big, I mean a project that is, that I'm really excited about, and then I'm putting my all, whatever combination of things or powers that I possess or talents or skills or anything, whenever I do that, and I get engrossed, and every day, it takes over everything else I do, then I'm always a little weirded out. And although I'm here because I do the show, and I'm still doing the show until I stop doing the show, then I won't do the show anymore. But I've been here since the year, oh, I shouldn't say that. See, what I was going to do was going to say the year of the flood, because that used to be a big saying, a popular saying, because the flood meant in the phrase, since the year of the flood, referred to, of course, the biblical story when God said, I'm going to drown a whole bunch of you except for the Noah family. See, so that's what that meant. And with the horrendous weather that destroyed half of, but whatever it did was terrible down there in Texas. You know, everyone knows that. But I shouldn't have said that, since the year of the flood, because this, in a sense, is the year of the flood. This flood is real on top of all the stuff. But that's a matter for you people to think about. I know no one's listening that really knows or about that. I mean, Texas, yeah, but the other stuff, okay. So when I'm involved with a project, I mean, I'm deeply involved. I mean, my skin, the very essence of my skin... I'm looking for poetic ways to tell you that I'm engrossed. My heart of hearts. Oh yeah, I love that phrase, heart of hearts. That means, of course, the heart, the metaphor heart, the heart you have that symbolizes the heart and soul of you. The soul of you that is the heart inside of your actual muscle, because the heart is a muscle. You know, it took me years to figure that one out. I didn't figure it out. Someone eventually told me in school. I think it was in college. Till then, everyone said, my heart, the heart's an organ, because organ and love are related somehow. And in the heart is anyway. But when my bones, my very bones, the very fiber, no, right down to the marrow. God, boy, I got a lot of those euphemisms. Are they euphemisms? No, they're not. Yeah, maybe they are euphemisms. Maybe they could be. You can use them that way. Down to the bone, to the marrow of the bone, I am involved in this particular project. And I can't tell you either. I'm just telling you about the essence, the depth, the dimension of this, and how every day of my life it affects me as I'm involved in it. Now, eventually, you could be involved in a project even after a project is over, of course, because there are many repercussions and there are many ripples in that stream. Once you're finished with the project, if it's something you have to build or something you have to write or something you have, you know, it's not like it's over. But the creation of it, the building of it, I think this is the way a lot of people who did very important things, not that this is very important, this is, believe me, and we're not going to cure cancer with this project. But I'm telling you, me, myself and I, all three of us, and any other characters that surface during the creation of this project, no characters in this project are related to or should be confused with the living or dead. Oh, yeah. You know, when they say living or dead, that's that really is wrong. characters fictional or unfit, you know, so they should say, I don't know what they say or why they say it. I'm just tired I'm not even going to go into that area. I'm just going to tell you right now that I'm a couple of beats off with everything I do because my focus, without even trying, is so married to this particular project. And I'm, everything I do refers to it. I stop and think, and you know, sometimes when you're not doing anything or whatever, or you got things to do that are just normal or whatever, you're not that projects aren't normal, but you know, and then you think of things, you got a memory, you think of an old memory, which is what a memory is. It's old, it can't be new. And you think of all these things that go on, just your mind just, you know, floats around and, you know, you're so, if you have, saloon doors, you know what I'm talking about. And if you don't even know what I just said, then you're new to the show. But, when I'm in that particular area, and sometimes when I'm watching something, maybe watching a movie, and then it's interrupted by my involvement with this project. Whenever I do, I'm there. And that doesn't always happen. That's even for a writer or an artist or even in art or not in art. That is the question I ask you, ladies and gentlemen and germs. So if you do excuse me for the last couple of weeks and maybe the next couple of weeks too, how I have been skipping over little things like that, thoughts, not completing sentences, and generally annoyed with the very thing that annoys me about other people. So then you'll know. You should know that. So I, to my audience, I apologize. Now, here's the funny thing, and I think this is funny, and that is that I know there are audience members out there going, how the hell can we tell the difference between you now and you when you didn't have a project? Because you're still this, your voice and what you say are still these meandering thoughts and connected and disconnected ideas, concepts, notions, feelings that you express into words, compliance, and you're right. So there I am feeling compelled. That's part of it too. Because when you get into a project that affects your heart, when it, and then now I'm going to sound like the pretentious, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and now welcome to the pretentious artist. His name is Frank Cotolo, and he's about to tell you something that has to do with creating art. I don't like to be self-conscious about that, but when you're doing something that really has heart, and you're putting your heart into it, whatever that art may be for you, you can't express it? What are you? It's amazing. The man's a broadcaster, a writer, a performer, a loudmouth, an annoying specimen of humankind. And what does he do? He stumbles over his own words. Well, then let's just don't just forget about everything I said. Start the show again. I'm Frank Cotolo. Hello. And ice cap and all that stuff. You good go to get my books. Why don't you do that? Why don't we do that before the Heather comes on? I'm sure hoping to heck that the Heather, oh, she tagged me. Heather tagged me because we will be going live with the always fun, hyper and hyper smart me. Oh, she's such a darling. Wait until Heather Drain sees what I have in store for her, huh? Tag your friends and get on. We'll give everybody a chance to get connected. If you're on Facebook and you haven't been connected, you need to come on over here. Now, you remember this also, and that's this. This is what I want you to remember, this thing right here. This is a show you can hear on other stations throughout the week. And if you're listening on other stations, you know that because this is on, it's on eternally. It's eternally on somewhere. It's like the sun. It's always daytime somewhere in the world. It's always Cotolo Chronicles. On some station, in some replay, on some iPod, in some stream somewhere. And then a lot of shows can't say that, don't say that, won't say that. And I won't let them get away if they do. So you can get it. And if you, if someone tells you about it and you miss it, then you go back to JuicedTalk.com. On JuicedTalk.com, many, many archives. No, it's one archive. Well, there are archives of other shows, but I mean, you can get the Cthulhu Chronicles archives. And you can also hear us twice a day, weekdays on TrueTalkRadio.com. And there's other places. If you go to CthulhuChronicles.blogspot.com, you'll see the other stations. But I'm telling you, I'm warning you, that may be a little bit inaccurate. There's a lot of, I have not, I have a giant staff, 16 people come in every morning, clock in, sit down and go, well, yes, Mr. Frank, are we going to have a meeting? No, it doesn't happen that way. I haven't updated the stations. Every once in a while, I just do that. But I'm not doing things like that. It's bad enough to get me to do things like that. I don't do things like that, even when I have to, or when I should, or I kick the can down the road, as they say. Kicking the can down the road to find out that I should have done it. So you can just find your favorite search engine. You know, it's better I stop than I say something wrong. I stop, find the word, saloon doors, the thing comes through, the word comes through, the thought comes, and then I pick it up again. It's better. Hear that? These are dynamics. And that's one thing. I mean, I like when critics say, well, he's dynamic, as opposed to he's just this spring. It's like a spring. You know, you hit it and it goes reverberates eternally. And that's not me. Okay. If you want to hear the show again, you can go do it, is what I'm saying. And wherever you want to hear it, you can hear it. Or best, you just find your favorite search engine. And put in Cthulhu Chronicles, lots of things will come up, as they do with most popular subjects. And then you can start clicking. You may find stations anywhere that have it. And I endorse, and I emphasize, and I approve of the fact that you listen to it on other stations, as well as you listen to it live on Thursday nights, Fridays around the world. And I'm not Wednesdays. We don't go back. We're not ahead of anyone. Oh, yes, we're ahead of the West Coast in the United States and the West Coast in Canada. What do you mean the West Coast in Canada is not the same as the West Coast? Hi, yi, yi. So we are definitely ahead of some people's time zones, and we're behind some people's time zones. So I have to say things like that. Like, it's a good day, it's a good night, good day, good night, and have a good time. But what you're going to do is find us and find another station, or just go download or stream or get the show for your own benefit. And then you could put that MP3 file anywhere. I'll tell you where to put it. You can put it anywhere, because you can do anything you want with that. It's free. Okay. And you can't say that. Now, even though some things are free, like the, what's his name, Adam Carolla and some of these other guys that have this stuff, I don't begrudge anybody for making money. And I'm not jealous that they do. I mean, I get perks and I get my own rewards. Okay. So that doesn't happen, but I will tell you this, and I am telling you this right now. And that is that this is free, and you're not even going to hear commercials, except for me talking about my books or anything else. Like, people who are on the show, guests will tell you, I have a book, I have a movie, I have a play, I have a bicycle, I have dinner waiting for me in the next room, whatever the case may be. But this is free. And when you get it, you don't get that polish, you know? And there's nothing against that polish, but the polish of a podcast has always made me sick and annoyed me. Because I like the very natural broadcasting atmosphere, and that's what we bring to you. So even when you listen to this show, you download it, you listen to it on your iPad, you listen to it on an iPhone, or with earbuds, or whatever you do, whatever the case may be, you're just hearing what happens here. Okay? You're not getting it, and you're not going, no, pause for a word from our sponsor. But I do have stuff. You want to hear stuff? I can put stuff on. I can put stuff on about my books at Amazon, because you can go get them there. I can put stuff about my books on, I do that stuff, but I'm not doing it right now. So I'm just telling you that there's no excuse if you want to hear the show saying, yeah, I missed it. That's just garbage. You can find a way to hear it. And I told you those ways. So go on and get it. Now, I want you also to get yourself some beverage.
I got mine over here.
Because Heather, I hear, is here, and she's going to get a big surprise when I did something that I never do. But I did it for her. And you're going to share it with her, I think. I hope she can hear it.
No.
And we'll work it out. You got to get yourself some beverage. So whatever you want to drink, get it. And then you could open up another browser, maybe. Excuse me, open up another browser. Wow, what's going on? Hey, coffee's supposed to clear it up. The hot stuff supposed to clear it up like Caruso, right? Whiskey. He would take, when I say take, a drink, a shot of whiskey. Not on the rocks, not with soda or anything else. Whiskey, pure alcohol whiskey before he sang. And that was Enrico Caruso, the famous opera singer. And if you don't know him, he's not famous enough. That's what I'd say. I'd say maybe even though he's been dead for something 70 years or something, that maybe you should get a PR guy. Or maybe the estate should take care of that. Enrico Caruso should sing. And before he did, he drank one shot of whiskey because he said it relaxed his vocal cords. And the thing about that is, where did he hear that? Right? And then who followed? A guy named Mario Lanza, who played Enrico Caruso. Now I'm into this Heather stuff. He played Enrico Caruso in a movie. And he did opera and other stuff too, as had most operatic voices. You know, they're both Italian, right? Lanza, Caruso, right? Come on. And he would drink before he sang anything. He sang pop songs too. He would drink a one shot. Said it relaxed his vocal cords. Now I never looked that up and I don't know. And I haven't asked the doctor, because when I go to the doctor, I usually don't ask them about celebrities who have died or are alive. I stick to my own health, my own body, say. I don't say, hey doctor, and by the way, because I was at the doctor the other day, and by the way, thank you very much. I had a very healthy review of my insides and my outsides. So I thank you very much for that. But I don't say, hey doc, let me ask you a question though. Enrico Caruso, remember him? Oh yeah, he was, the famous Enrico Caruso used to drink a shot of pure whiskey before he went out and sang opera. He said it loosened his vocal cords. I don't do that. I don't ask my doctor. If he knows, why spend money and go to the doctor if you're going to talk about someone else? Unless it goes to your child and you're there with someone else, your lover. There's always an exception. Something's always happening. And what's happening here? Cotolo Chronicles. My name is Frank Cotolo, a man whose name adorns the title of the show. What I'm going to do, two things. The first thing is I'm going to go get Heather Drain, who I believe is online right now. Where is she? I don't know which. Which one is she here? I have two Heather Drains. I have two. Well, let's see. Wait. Maybe she's on. Let me make sure I get the right one here. I have two. Ah, here's Heather Drain. This one, she's on. And let's call her. Because it's 7 minutes early. 7 minutes before I said I was going to call Heather Drain. I'm calling. 7 minutes before, but.
Hello.
Heather Drain?
Hello, Frank.
I get seven more minutes with Heather Drain, and so do you, listeners, because I went a little early, but I saw you were online, so I said, enough of me. I've had enough.
And all you lucky duckies out there get Frank and I together. Isn't that amazing?
Now I have a real surprise for you, and it's, I don't know, maybe you'll hate it, but maybe, uh-oh. or maybe you'll like it. I want to make sure one thing first though.
Okay.
Let me know if you could hear, the following, sounds. Okay. Someone's going to say something. Let me know if you can hear this. I want to make sure of these sound things, because I got to play something for you. Okay.
Okay.
Now I'm going to play this first. Let me know if you can hear this.
You are listening to Cotolo Chronicles.
Did you hear that?
No.
How does this work? can't hear that? You couldn't hear that. Listen.
You are listening to Cthulhu Chronicles.
You didn't hear. You were listening to Cthulhu Chronicles. The person just said that.
No, I just heard.
How is this? I don't understand. I got a microphone on that.
I don't know. I just heard the ether. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
Ether. What ether?
The nebulous ether. I don't know.
This happened to me once before and I don't understand. I was going to do this live, but then you're not going to hear it either. Oh man, this is a shame.
I'm hearing it in my heart.
No, another hard thing. All right. If I could figure this out. Oh geez. I really wanted to do it as you were on. I have a great introduction for you and I don't understand what, how can it not pick it up? Can you hear? Move this thing around. So you can hear me, right? Obviously.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. Crystal clear.
Okay, so tell me if you could hear this now. Here comes this. Tell me if you could hear this. It's going to be music, okay?
Okay.
Okay, just tell me if you can hear this. Could you hear that?
No. I'm sorry.
I don't understand how I could use this mic and you could hear me. And then when I put this mic on another source, you can't hear it.
I don't know. Maybe it's my mic.
No, this happened before. And I'm pissed. Because this is so special. You know,
you gotta channel that anger. We gotta channel it together.
Yeah, we'll do that. Yeah, we'll do that. But that makes no sense. I mean, this like defies the entire digital platform, what just happened here.
It's a metaphor for life.
Oh, God. I'm bad. I feel bad, too, because I think you really would like. And you know what I'm going to do? I'll have to send this to you I'll send it to you. And then, because I didn't want to embarrass you. I'll send you something on your Facebook, because you could do that, right? Can I send an MP3 file on Facebook?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Now, if you put something on in your in the background, I'd hear it.
Yeah, I would assume so.
All right, let's get on with the show. Let's just move on. Right. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to take that time away from you. Except this was so special. You'll love it anyway. Well, it'll be between you and me, and then if you want to share it with the world, please be my guest.
Okay.
In the meantime, it's good. In the meantime, there's no way to upshow her. Upshow? What's the word? Upshow?
Upshow. I like it.
Is that a word? Yeah. No way to upshow her.
It is now, baby.
Here's Heather Drain, direct from, you're not in the line of any particular rain and bad storms, are you?
No. Okay. Though my thoughts, definitely, I hope everybody's being safe. And as safe as one can be in this, so scary.
Well, yeah, I thought the storm was going your way.
I think we're supposed to get some, a bit of rain from it, we're in the south, but we're almost more towards the Midwest part of the south.
Yeah.
So by the time it hits us, it'll be a little bit diffused. So
I automatically said somewhere I was talking before. About whatever I was talking about. And I used the phrase, and I didn't realize I was using this phrase. I said, boy, that happened in the year of the flood, I said. And I'm going like, hey, wait, that has a whole new meaning to it now. Because this is, right? Doesn't that refer to the Bible flood?
I believe so, yeah.
All right. So now you could refer to this.
It's the new year of the flood.
If you can.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, but
I prefer men.
Well, we could prove this one, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, okay. I prefer metaphorical floods. You know, it's less harmful to people and, you could channel that with some great art,
It seems like years. I don't remember the last time you were on, but how are you and what's going on with you?
I'm doing good. Actually, according to my Skype logs, we did do this last year.
That's a year.
It's been a year.
Yeah, that's a year. It's a long time. That's a long time for me.
Time is so weird. I find it's half fluid where, one minute it's like September and the next minute you're like, whoa, it's January, time's fluid. But then at the same time, it feels really long and stretchy. at the same time.
And yet there's only now.
There's only now. So, why live in the past when we have the present?
There is no past. There is no future. There is no year and no flood. Now.
There is nothing.
Hopefully an audience. What have you been doing?
Well, the latest, most exciting thing on the docket is I am finishing up, along with my brilliant and fabulous writing partner, John Skip. Me and John have, John and I have written, the Bizarro Film Encyclopedia, Volume 1.
I saw that on Armando, Heather. Let's talk about that, cause maybe you just started it last time you talked about it or what? Tell us.
Yeah. John and I had actually, we first sort of, discussed during this book, about 2-3 years ago. And slowly we've been kind of piecing it together and kind of refining it and shaping it into the, you know, the beautiful shape that we want it to be. And, it's very exciting. It's basically, you know, it's sort of in a way, it's half tribute to all of the great weird film books, from the past that we love. And certainly a lot of the ones I grew up with, like, you know, Research's Incredibly Strange Films, the Psychotronic Guides, Sleazoid Express, Mondo Macabro, you know, Moral Tales, just all of, so many. I'm forgetting a bunch more. Midnight Movies, but and of course, Danny Perry's cult films. There's so many of you know, these books in the past, but we wanted to do something that was current and kind of a great tribute and just the kind of thing where, like, if you're into weird culture, you can pick it up and be like, yes, I found my tribe, you know, and you get it. But also, you know, hopefully accessible enough to where, you know, for the unconverted but curious, you too can pick it up and, you know, if you're just like, what is this? What the hell is all of this strangeness? You can pick it up and be, and have your minds, properly blown. So it's been a lot of fun putting it together, with John, and we're looking forward to doing future volumes too. Just something we can kind of like, it's like a Matryoshka doll. We just keep building layers upon it.
So it's done?
We're kind of like, you know, sort of polishing it up at this point, but the meat of the book is done and we should have it, it should be released early 2018.
Wow. Why so long?
Why so long? Well, we still gotta edit it. The art for it.
So it's not done.
It's done.
I know, I know what you're saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know. You're being silly.
Well, that's just... Well, just one part of me, the serious part of me, doesn't go on radio. I don't know. I'm looking forward to that because I don't know John, but I sure as hell know you know your stuff when it comes to all this.
Oh, well, thank you. Now, and John's a phenomenal writer, and he's probably, a lot of people are familiar with his fiction work. He was one of the kind of the godfathers of the splatterpunk subgenre in the 80s, but he's also, made some great short films. He's in the process of getting the elements together to make his first feature film, Hope in Hell. He's also like a really good musician. Like he's just just one of those Renaissance guys who can do 80 things and they're all fascinating and brilliant. And so
now, when we call people Renaissance people, I'm wondering, these things come up with me and I think about them, but now wait a second. Leonardo da Vinci was a Renaissance guy, wasn't he? Because he was doing the Renaissance, right?
I believe so. I don't have my cliff notes with me for this.
I know that's not bizarre enough. So maybe it does. It's not in the book. Wait a second. But does that mean that Leonardo da Vinci, he painted, he wrote things, but he painted. So painting and writing, you wouldn't call, and then what, did he play the lute? Did he dance? I mean, to be a Renaissance man, do you have to have at least 5 things you do or something? I mean, you can't just do 2 things or, right? You can't just, I write and I paint. Oh, and I sculpt? That's still art. I mean, what's the true definition of a Renaissance man? I ask you.
Well, my definition of a Renaissance man or woman is basically somebody who can tackle multiple things, and it could be under the umbrella of art, but each different art form requires a different set of skills and, you know, talents and vision. And if somebody can tackle like numerous types of art, and apply the same level of passion and hard work and all of that good stuff and still kick ass at all of them. To me, that's a Renaissance person. John's definitely a Renaissance man. I try to be a Renaissance lady. I don't know if I am, but well, it's a goal.
Well, you definitely define it. I think that definition came well after the Renaissance. People, I probably just used it as a, I guess it's a metaphor. Because the Renaissance was filled with people who did a lot of things. You know as well as I do, and I that, you know, there are things that people say, and there are things that people mean, and there are phrases we use and everything. And, I don't know where these things develop, but we just naturally say these things like it's, like everybody knows what we mean, and some people do know what we mean. But instead of, you know what I mean? Like that. Like, we use that a lot. You know what I hate? I've been talking about this too, and this really bugs the living daylights out of me. I can't stand everybody being called a legend. Everyone can't be a legend. Can they? That's impossible.
We're living on a planet of legends. I don't know. I kind of like that.
By definition, though, you know, look what we're doing. By definition, it's on the news, and then someone dies, and they go, the legendary musician, the legendary writer, the legendary comic, the legendary, right? And then if you looked up legend, you'd go, wow, wait a second. This is a legend? This guy's a legend? This girl's a legend? This woman's a legend? This thing is... And then they go, now here's the weather. So after they do that, they go to the weather, and he's a weatherman, and he's talking about the storm, and he says it's going to go further and further. And I'm going, because a weatherman doesn't even know the difference between further and farther. What am I listening to? I'm out of touch with everybody.
It's dry. Frank, I just picture you having a giant bowl of pixie sticks. What? At your desk, get a large carafe of coffee.
There don't even exist pixies, but they have created sticks.
This is getting very Seinfeldian at this point. I think we're getting into some Seinfeld territory.
Let's go back. Let's go back to you. Enough about what I think about and can't handle. That's bizarre. I mean, this bizarre stuff. Now, in this book, like, give me an idea of how you've organized this book. You say it's a bizarre book about the bizarre books.
Well, no. It's a compendium about basically the crux of it is bizarre cinema, and and we have like a really great medley of films to start off the first volume, and we have some like cherished cult classics like Russ Meyer's, you know, Beyond the Valley of the Dolls.
Oh, Russ, yeah.
Richard Elfman's Forbidden Zone, Brian De Palma's Phantom of Paradise. But we also have like some newer films, like It Follows, Anna Biller's The Love Witch, Panos Cosmatos's Beyond the Black Rainbow, and a bunch of other more titles. We also have a few other little, what I call like a sort of little appetizers, little muse bouches, mm-hmm. or boucher. I'm probably mispronouncing that, but it's live. It's all good. We're human here, people. We love you. We know you're not going to judge us.
No, they're not going to judge me. Yeah, right. So, yeah, I'm afraid my, you know, any reflection upon that you get of me after this will dissipate soon enough, and you'll be okay again. Listen. So when you talk about, let's say you talk about the book, I mean, you don't just list these things. Let's just take Russ Meyer's, Beyond the Valley of Dolls. What do you do in it? I mean, you explain, you say it's a compendium. Is it like an encyclopedia? What do you do in the text of each film?
Well, what we do, cause one of the things that, has been so cool about working on this book with John is his approach to film and my approach to film are very similar, in the sense that we're both people that kind of look for the meat of it. Like we, you know, both of us have like, you know, trivia and facts, you know, in our pieces when we can, but the main focus is the film itself to give the reader an idea of this particular unique cinematic landscape that lies ahead for them with each film. Some things we have spoilers, some things we don't, you know, we try to keep a little bit of mystery. Of course, in this age of internet, anybody could Google, but why do that? You know, like let's re-embrace mystery in this life and let's definitely keep embracing art. And that's kind of what this book is. It's a celebration, I think, of great art. It's a celebration of people and filmmakers who had the balls to kind of make these films that were obviously, you know, whether they're art films or cult films or whatever, none of these films are super mainstream enough to where it's going to, you know, buy anybody a yacht or anything like that. But, you know, fuck that. These are people who, you know, are dedicated to their vision and their heart, and they did it, and we love them for it, and we're here to celebrate them for it.
Do you think, I lost my train of thought there for a second. There's another one, a train of thought.
It's not really a train.
No, it's
but
not.
But it's not really a thought.
Hey, you know, you want to hear another one? Listen to this. Here's another one. Why is everyone thrown under the bus in these days, day and age? Well, what do they throw people under the bus? What is it about the bus that represents betrayal? Think about these things as metaphors and stuff. Why he threw my friend under the bus? Why a bus? Huh?
I don't. They're there. I wish I could channel my inner Werner Herzog right now and give you a very Herzogian.
My doctor told me about that. He said you have a little problem with your inner Werner Wilcock.
Wow, that was.
You have a little trouble. Listen, the movies that you talk about though as wide and as varied and as archived as is YouTube and various places like that. I imagine some of the movies you're talking about aren't even available, Netflix or YouTube. So like right now, if I wanted to go see Beyond the Valley of the Dolls or any other Russ Meyer movie, where would I go?
Well, the good news about Beyond the Valley of the Dolls is that actually, just a few months ago, I got a really beautiful release, through Criterion Collection. And so it's in print and it's pretty easy to find. Some of Russ's or almost pretty much almost everything else Russ has done is way pretty much out of print.
Right. I'm trying to think of the other ones.
Yeah. Well, I know there's some issues or there were some issues with, the people who are running the estate. I don't know the full legal, ramifications of it now. I do know that, I think the time is way overdue for those films for those prints to be remastered and released properly. Cause I think Russ Meyer's honestly one of the greatest American auteurs, we've ever had. I think Meyer was a genius and I'm a huge Russ Meyer fan. Everybody should know who Russ Meyer is. He's great.
Russ had a lot of qualities from what I know. I don't know him. I didn't know him. I haven't read a lot about him, but what I have read about him and what I know about the other person I'm going to mention, I think that there's some kind of soulful connection, between that filmmaker, Russ Meyer, and Howard Hughes. Do you see that connection?
Maybe in the sense of, I think they were two very different men. Maybe they both liked.
I don't know about
curvy
that.
Ladies. Is that what you're angling for? You're angling for the booby.
I am going to include that because in the sense that ultra maternal thing that it represented, and the fact that, Russ wasn't this like, you know, millionaire guy. If he was, pictures probably wouldn't be as good. You ever think about, right? Don't you think?
I think Russ was pretty savvy with me. I think that one of the differences between him and Hughes is that I think Russ, I don't think Russ was mentally ill. Like obviously Howard has some mental illness problems. I think Russ was just a red-blooded, American male who liked apple pie and baseball and big titties but was also a great, you know, like jocular man in his films, but he also, you know, had an amazingly keen eye. Some of his films are some of the best edited I've ever seen. His cinematography's, sterling. His universe of women, especially people fixate on the large breastedness of them, which, I mean, who could blame them? It's pretty obvious, but you know, he had a universe of women who were really strong. Like these are these like super women who, you know, they're not the fools. They're not bimbos.
There you go. That's that maternal, that's that strong maternal thing, that, image, that also was shared by, Hughes, because his movies all involve, that. But anyway, I just thought I'd bring that up. I know it's not in the book, and I know no one would even, I mean, you could see it, but being kind. Let's,
Well, no, I can say in the sense of course, I think a lot of people associate with Howard Hughes, you know, of course Hughes discovered Jane Russell and her breakout film with him and her breakout film in general was The Outlaw and, you know, which was very racy. I think the Legion of Decency banned it or condemned it and, you know, and there's those great stills of just her. I mean, Jane Russell was I mean, that was a knockout dame if ever there was one. And yeah, she was very, granted, she's a little small chested compared to some of Russ's women.
Do you
Russ
know?
Russ had some women that were like from, I'm like, what country? What magical land?
Right.
These women come from.
I know. It's like, but here's something I didn't know. And I watched, I mean, one of my favorite movies of all time is The Aviator. You know, the Scorsese movie and not because it's such a cinematic, you know, joy to watch or creative, but it's just that I think it truthfully represents a guy who for some reason or another, I just identify with so much, everything, the sickness too. But anyway, here's the deal. I didn't realize there was a character in it. And she's like, when he meets her, she's 14.
Mm-hmm.
And her name is, well, I'm not going to tell you her name because this is, you would understand this. And I'm watching, I've seen the movie a million times. It's one of those movies I could pick up anywhere and just watch it. And I'm watching, I'm going, well, who is this? You'll know who all the other, you know, actresses are that are involved with him and everything, but who is this girl? Who is it? And then I found out that, it was someone who was, when I was young, there was these black and white movies. I used to see these 50s movies well before your time.
Oh, my God.
And you know who I'm talking about?
I think I do because you keep going.
And, okay.
I want to see if I'm right.
And you're the only one who's going to be able to do this. And I'm going like, I didn't know who it was or what have you. And then I don't know how it happened, but it came about that I went looked it up or I did something. I went, oh, my goodness, this is her. She was in the movie that it might have been, you know, one of my first experiences, as a man of finding a certain part of my body that expanded without doing anything.
Your brain.
it's beyond, there's no way. But, and she was in a movie called This Island Earth.
Oh.
Oh, you were wrong?
Yeah, I was going to say it was maybe Van Doren.
No.
But maybe Van Doren does have a great Howard Hughes story in her book, Playing the Fields. That's why I was thinking it was Mamie.
Well, he's all over the place, but he gave this woman her start in movies, and she was in movies and on until she died and she left him, but she was really an item and with him for a long time. Well, she was, I think 16 or 14 when he signed her up and they were, you know, illicitly people. Who is the lead? You know this woman. She was an actress and she's in a lot of the movies we've talked about. Who was the lead lady in the movie This Island Earth with Jeff Morrow and that other guy?
God, see, I'm trying to think because I mean, I've seen This Island Earth like two or three times over the years. And
what else was she in?
My mind, and I'm refusing to cheat.
I think she's in
your book. Easy for me to Google. I'm not going to do this because we're live and I want to be real with your listeners.
And I know. I didn't mean to put you on the spot or anything.
It's all good. You always do, Frank.
I don't mean to.
You always put me on the spot.
Because I put you for credit. I give you credit for so much. And I know that.
You're so sweet.
When I say your first name, you'll know immediately. Her first name was Faith.
Oh, shit. I can't.
Wow.
I keep thinking Mamie Van Doren. I got Mamie brain. I don't.
Okay.
I don't.
Well, anyway.
What's her name?
I didn't. Well, why did I bring her up? Oh, because there was a template. She was a template. If you look at Ava Gardner, who he screwed around with for a long time. If you look at even Katharine Hepburn. If you look at these, and then you look at Faith Demurg. Demurg? Demurg? Is that how you say it? Faith Demurg? 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 D-O-M-E-R? Demurg?
Demurg?
Demurg.
Sure. I'm probably going to butcher it more, so I don't.
You know what I'm talking about now, don't you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I can see her. I'm not as honestly familiar with her whole body of work. I gotta keep it real.
I could
talk about Mamie though.
Okay,
I love me some Mamie.
But what I'm saying is that, Eva, now I can't even remember her name, the one that Russ Meyer always had in his, what was her name? The one, she had big bust. No, it was an Eva. He had one woman who was in a lot of his movies. Russ Meyer.
Well, I know, he was married to Eve Meyer.
That's it, Eve Meyer. Okay. She, all the women orbiting her in those movies are all template. She's the template for his discontent. The template. This is the template of my discontent. You know who I'm talking about, right? Okay.
Yeah, Eve Meyer was gorgeous. And actually, the cool thing, I don't know if everybody knows this, Eve actually, I mean, even though, like, their marriage didn't last, you know, super long, she actually, her and Russ, you know, basically remained friends, and she was, like, a producer in a number of his films.
Oh.
So, yeah. So I thought that was always pretty cool. Very, you know, she had brains and beauty, that one.
I think, Russ might have been weirder. This is just a thought. I don't mean to say I know more about Russ Meyer than you do, but I think he was weird and maybe as mental as Howard, but that doesn't matter. What matters is Bizarro, the story of all these, and we'll talk more about these people here in the book as we are talking with Heather Drain, who's back for the first time in a year, and I hope to see her again next year, or before that. And she's here on Total Chronicles, and we're talking about the book is called, say it again, Bizarro.
The Bizarro Film Encyclopedia.
Well, there it is. I said it is an encyclopedia. So now back to what I originally said. Here is it. It says go to another movie besides. Let's move away from Russ Meyer because I've made a mess of that. Whole conversation.
No. And honestly, anytime I think Howard Hughes gets mentioned, I think we all have to just take in mind and remember that one of his favorite movies was Ice Station Zebra.
Yes.
And
yes.
He'd watch it repeatedly in his underwear. And I want all of you to picture that with me right now as we're invoking this.
In a hotel room with adorned with tissues and men with white gloves who just, not for illicit reasons, but men with white gloves. And germs. But yes, Ice Station Zebra, but that's not, give me another, underground movie that plays a prominent role in this book.
Well, we have a chapter on, what's called the Flesh Trilogy, or I'm actually calling it the Flesh Trilogy. It's three films that, were made by Michael and Roberta Finlay. And there's Touch of Her Flesh, Kiss of Her Flesh, and Curse of Her Flesh. Curse is the second one. Mm. And, they're like art films and like insane pulp novel plots merged into one just completely like acid jazz batshit collective. And they're amazing.
Can I use that phrase? I want that phrase as part of my, vocabulary. Give me
it's
going to
be
again.
My tombstone.
Give me that one again.
Acid jazz batshit collective.
Oh, hold on. I got to write this down. I can never remember. Hold on. I got to get this down. I will not let this one go. Acid. I'm gonna get this here. Right.
You're literally writing it down.
I'm literally writing acid. Acid.
Acid.
Yeah.
Jazz. Batshit. Collective.
This is now part of my jargon, my vocabulary. Wait till I drop this on people.
It's the Lord's work, let me tell you.
I'm gonna overuse it. Like I'm gonna be like, you know, be like at a restaurant with somebody, or just take some woman out to a restaurant. I'm gonna go, and the waiter's gonna come over and bring me, you know, hors d'oeuvres. And I go, what kind of acid jazz batshit collective is this? Go ahead.
They'll be like, sir, we're gonna ask you to leave.
And then I'll say, what kind of an acid jazz batshit collective restaurant is this? Go ahead. I haven't seen the trilogy. I haven't even seen the one-agy of the two-agy or the trilogy. I don't know these people. You know so much more than I. And I used to go to underground theaters before you were born. And I don't know
things. I think you know a lot more than you give yourself credit for. Cause that's the thing. Like I would never personally call myself a scholar of anything. I know more than probably the average bear on things, but there are people that knew way more than me. I just have a lot of heart.
Yeah, I do.
Have a lot of heart.
Yeah, and you're very, and you're humble. And you're humble. Because that Jesus, you know a lot more than that. Now, give me the names of these.
I'm wearing a crown right now. Okay. I'm not humble.
give me the name of these two that were that did this trilogy again.
Well, it was a then husband and wife team, Michael and Roberta Finlay. And Michael was really kind of like the main, like, artist in them. And he starred in these films as the lead character, Richard Jennings. And Roberta, his wife, Roberta, did the cinematography on these films and a number of their other films together. And she's an amazing camera person, camera woman, and went on to be a director in her own right. Mm-hmm. But these films are just, they're just amazing. They're unlike anything. They'll probably horrify as many people as they delight. But that's the thing. I think the worst crime a piece of art can do is be boring. You know, like, yes. If something just, where you can't even remember it, you know, right. I think everybody's had that moment where they've seen a film and somebody asked them about it and they're like, huh. Mm. You know, and you're trying to remember it. Like, that's the worst. Cause even, you know, even something you hate, you'll remember it. You'll never forget it. You'll be like, man, fuck that film. I hate it. But, yeah, so that's the thing. I always try to, you know, investigate arts that to me are, you know, are interesting and have something new and different to offer.
So there's going to be a lot of movies and people. Mentioned in this, that a lot of people are not going to know. And that's what you're saying. Hopefully a more investigative audience, will be reading because you'll have a lot of fresh material here. There's not a lot of stuff written about the stuff you wrote about, correct?
Not a lot. I mean, with some of the titles, it ranges. I mean, there's definitely been a little more written on Russ, or say Brian De Palma, but,
right.
But that's the thing. We have a good mix, I think, of films and artists that, you know, that range from people and films that, you know, I think most people who are into cult film are going to definitely know, to things that are newer or maybe a little more obscure. Mm-hmm. You know, and hopefully everybody loves it. I feel really proud of it. I think, you know, John's chapters are amazing. And he's, you know, and we had to arm wrestle over some of the titles. Like Forbidden Zone was one, like me and him had to make a compromise because we both wanted to cover the Forbidden Zone. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean the Planet of the Apes Forbidden Zone. No. But that one's fabulous, too. But, of course, the musical directed by Richard Elfman, which was Danny Elfman, who's now a very famous film composer. Danny Elfman's first, you know, musical work for a film ever was Forbidden Zone. It was not Tim Burton. So it is brilliant.
A friend of mine knew Danny Elfman up in – he lives in Washington. He's from that area, I think, or he lived up there for a while. And, you know, before the grunge thing came in, Washington and around Seattle, it was a very, high energy pop, music scene going on up there. Okay. And, Danny Elfman once, he took my friend and someone else from a band went over the house and, Danny Elfman was talking about all this music that, listens to, a lot of classical music. You know,
mm-hmm.
and he played something. He listened to this and he played this something. He went, this is definitely, you know, it was great. It was terrific. And he played. And my friend said that it was, years later, I guess, I don't know how many years later, but that would be 80 something or what have you. He said, listen to this. He said, so I'm in a movies. He said, and I'm watching the Michael Keaton Batman. He said, and I'm hearing this. It's practically the record that Danny Elfman played for us.
Oh, wow.
this neo-postmodernism that I had people taking, you know, getting things from other things, you know. Just a Danny Elfman story there. I know it's not in your book. It's not in my book either. So it's just an acid jazz batshit collective thought.
That's life. That is our lives.
I had to add, jazz. I wanted to add something to this conversation. Tell us more. Why did you and John, decide how do you know John?
Well, actually John reached out to me, like he found me on Twitter of years ago, and he remembered my writing from video when I wrote for Video Watchdog and Dangerous Minds. Right. And he reached out, and of course I was familiar with him already because John's just, he's an amazing writer. And we just hit it off, and we found pretty immediately found a connection in terms of like, just, we loved a lot of the same things, and you know, have a lot of the similar tastes in film. And I had always wanted to do, you know, something like this, and he had too. And so it's like, well, you know, many hands can make light work. And we came up with this book together, and it's awesome. I've always wanted to create a book that, you know, would be kind of like a cool lifeline, not just for, you know, for adults, but it's just, you know, when I was a kid, all those cool film books to me were like, they were like a little touchstone. They were like a little ray of light for me, being like, hey, you know, this is your tribe. You know, you may be an unhappy teenager in a small town, but here is your connection. And it was just like, it's one of the things that got me through being a teenager was just, you know, with these books. And I was just like, and just the excitement of having them and finding out about these great weird movies. And if I could, if we could bring that out in at least one person, then I'm happy, you know?
Well, there are still people, even though the underground is pretty much, well, you and I have talked about this too. And the underground is pretty much, I don't know what is the underground anymore in these days. It's the top of the hour, everyone. You're listening to Cthulhu Chronicles. And of course, this is Heather Drain. You don't have to, I don't have to tell you. And,
I'm sorry.
That's okay. The underground doesn't, I don't even know if there is anything that is an underground anymore, but yeah, there are people, who are still, into, or still, there are, look, there's an entire generation out there that needs to know more about pop culture. Okay? Let me just put it straight to you. All right? There are a lot of people out there who are in this newer generation, this millennial generation, are thinking that a lot of the stuff that's going on now is not a byproduct of things that happened before. When it is, of course, of course. We all know that. That's how people are inspired and create anything that would be considered new. But every generation thinks they're the owners of any particular things. I like to always tell younger people, and I like to hang out with younger people better because I hate people my own age. So and I'm always telling them, look at this, look at that, look at this. You didn't know this was around because they're not as... they're not as hungry to search for things as you people like you and I have been over the years. You know what I'm saying? Am I saying anything?
No. I see what you're saying. Yeah. I like to think that I think there's always going to be people that are there because I mean when I was growing up in the 90s, you know, I definitely was kind of like an odd duck. I didn't know anybody. I had a handful of friends who were kind of, you know, they were cool with some of the horror movie stuff. But I mean, as far as like being like, oh wow, who's this guy, you know, Hordorowski or, you know, or like, oh my God, I love The Tubes. Like I had nobody, to connect with on a musical or film level on that. But that's why finding like, you know, magazines and books and stuff like that were so rewarding because it's kind of like a reaffirmation of like, hey, you're not alone. I mean, kind of the great thing about the landscape now is with the internet, you know, kids today have kind of like, they have social media, which has a downside as like everything else in life does. But the good side to it is that, you know, some kid in living in nowhere, Kansas, you know, who, you know, is maybe, you know, bullied. Maybe they're into weird art. Maybe they're transgendered, don't fit into like the status quo and they can go on something like Tumblr, you know, or Twitter or something and find like, little one, you're not alone, baby. And don't let assholes get to you. You're going to get through this and you're going to find your tribe and it's all good. You know, ultimately we're all in this together. And to me, that's what we do. That's why you do what you do. It's why I do. We do it out of love and connection.
Wait, I gotta write this down. I wanna know why I do what the hell I do here. We do it out of love.
Well, don't you think so? I mean, we all, because Frank, you always like, you know, from the minute you and I like got to know each other, I was always like, man, Frank has such a great heart, and you are completely your own person. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nobody else on this planet like you. You make, you know, you're a great writer. You've been doing, you know, your show, you know, for so long. And that's like, to me, to do that in this life, you know, that takes passion and conviction. And I think that's something that should always be encouraged.
I don't disagree with you, and I certainly will replay again and again the wonderful things you just said about me. Because, but no, I know what you're talking about, and I agree with you. What bothers me is that the very people that you're talking about, it says now you have, you know, the internet, and you have, you know, a phone, you have, I tell people, younger people, I say, you know, exactly what you're saying. I say, you know, when, if we wanted to search for something that, like you said, we can identify with that was weird or anything, any subject at all, we had to really search. We had to look, we had to go to libraries, we had to talk to people, we had to do, right now, it's right there in front of you. There's things you could look up and see that we never could find, you know, in comparison when we were younger. And don't do that again. Say when I was growing up in the 90s, because that just makes me want to get into a rocking chair. I want to get into a rocking chair and just count the rocks until it's over. I'll get my rocking chair off. But what I'm saying is the thing, these kids have to use this. I'm amazed how many kids don't use it for the kind of thing you're talking about. They look, you know what I'm saying? They don't realize what they have, this power, this theater they have in front of them. I don't understand how they don't look at it when they're into whatever they're into, writing, art, comedy. I don't understand why they're not looking at everything they possibly can, because it's all there now.
I think there's more than you'd realize, because that's, you know, it's like anything else in life. It's that, you know, like every, you know, it's harder sometimes to see what the current or new generation is doing when we're like from kind of a different perspective. But I think there's more than you realize. And I mean, you know, and sometimes, yeah, I mean, part of me kind of misses the thrill of the grail search. Cause you're right, before the internet, I mean, you had to, it was like searching for the holy grail, especially if you lived like kind of in a smaller working class area like I did. And it made it thrilling though when you did find something weird. And I mean, there are films I read about growing up that I would thought I would never in a million years ever get to see, much less have like a nice Blu-ray edition of, which is in the case of some of these films. But at the same time, I love that. I wish, you know, I think it's awesome that the new generation has like access, that has all of this access to great information and art that, I mean, you know, there's no way in hell we could, you know, some of us could have found growing up. So I think there are more than we realize. It's just, the way that media is engineered right now, and media has always had, you know, especially, and when I say media, I mean mainstream media, mainstream media has always had a lot of bullshit with it. I do not believe in nostalgia for one second, but, it is such a kind of monopolized beast in so many ways right now that it's harder, I think, for us to see the touchstones. Mm-hmm. You know, like cultural touchstones for younger people, for kids. But they're always there. I mean, I'm a firm believer, and I think there's always hope. I think there's always somebody doing something really interesting. With the internet age, it's like everything is so much more accessible. It makes the search harder, bizarrely enough, because there's so much data you have to go through. But yeah, no, I think it's there. And, you know, and that's I think there's always going to be people. I see it sometimes pop up in my own social media, whether it's, you know, like Twitter or, you know, Instagram or something like that, is I see people who are, you know, some of whom are barely into adulthood. Man. They're like 18, 19, 20 who are quoting really cool literature and being like, look at this painter I love. And, you know, like, that's the thing. I think there's always hope. The little us's are always out there, Frank.
But never in the majority, unfortunately.
But we're not paying for their school, damn it. You kids are on your own.
Yeah, right. Yes. But you know, the School of Hard Knocks is always out there and accepts anyone.
No, it's not free, but you don't pay with cash.
here's something I meant to ask you. And that is that now that we're on this subject, what is the pop culture medium now, in terms of cable TV, the things that are being sold to people, and that there are huge audiences for these things. And I'll give you an idea. The other day, whatever I was watching, it was one of those channels for something. And a commercial came up, and it said that the premiere of the 8th season of The Walking Dead. And I sat there and I went, eight seasons of this zombie thing? I mean, I couldn't fathom the fact that there were 8 seasons of this. Compared to, I don't know what to compare it to. I don't know, but there are things like that. And every, you know, there are all these things that pop up that are, they're really slick versions of things that these people that you talk about in this book, you know, couldn't do slickly. Is that a word, slickly?
They
couldn't do because they didn't have money, they didn't have the effect, and they didn't have the CGI and all this stuff. And now, what do you think of that stuff? I mean, you have 8 seasons of The Walking Dead, and you have a spinoff called Fear the Walking Dead. I don't get this. And it doesn't match. Or is that really mainstream? Is that the mainstream stuff? That Annabelle, all this other stuff they show that are horror, American horror, the things they're doing that is that are slick and cool in television, cable and stuff, and Netflix and Hulu or whatever else they do. Is that a question? Did I give you a question? You got the question?
I think I got the question. Okay. I mean, no. You gave me a few, which I totally dig. First of all, all of that's mainstream. I would consider it very mainstream, which I don't say that in any sort of like snobby thing. There are mainstream things I enjoy. I'm not an elitist.
Right.
As far as like things like budget, you know, that doesn't, to me, it's like you could have $100 million to make a film and it still could suck, mm-hmm. you know, and you could have $10 to make a film and it could still suck. I mean, the elements that make great cinema are not always gonna, you know, the core elements to make a great film are not gonna be something you could put a dollar amount on it, because it's basically a casserole of, you know, you need a great writer. You need a director with a good vision and a creative mind. You need actors who are interesting, have presence, and who are into it. And, you know, if you have things like a great editor on hand and some good music, that helps a hell of a lot too, and somebody who knows how to work a camera. But budget doesn't, like, case in point, I just last weekend I was studying Romero's The Crazies, like mm-hmm. his 1973 film. And that film is completely, completely brilliant. It's so good. I mean, I love George Romero. And, you know, he had a very low budget, because, like, they remade that film a few years ago. And for like $20 million, I think, or yeah, it's just some crazy amount. And I mean, the amount of money it cost for the remake, Romero could have made like probably like 12 crazy.
Right.
You know, right. but you know, his film, but you don't miss it. You don't miss that because it's, you know, his genius, like all of his, you know, he's got great composition, but he's got a lot of heart and he's got a lot of brains and got a lot of respect for his viewers. And on top of that, he had good actors. Yeah, you know, he knew how to do that. And, you know, give me a George Romero film any day over like Michael Bay or some wanker like that, you know.
You know, these days though, anybody, you know, younger artists are using the tools that are available to them. And as you know, as well as I do, that if you and I just wanted to do little films instead of writing letters to one another, it would be so easy on your phone or your thing and just do something. And it would be the kind of crystal clear brilliance that, you know, at least that way, I wouldn't even know how to get an effect. Because when we had analog, and I'm not, I am, believe me, because this show has been, you know, for the digital platform and everything in it from the beginning of time, because we were here at the beginning of time. But new artists, fresh artists, are you using the tools they have, and it does a lot of things for them that people who are using analog needed to invent and be creative. They were forced to be creative to a certain extent because they didn't have to push a button and it says, like, we want more shadows here. Well, you know, push the shadow button on the Windows movie thing and then suddenly, you know what I'm saying? It's like easy. It's there. And doesn't that suck a lot of the real creativity out of it? You know, lighting and, I mean, everything that had to be done really had to be done.
Well, I think there are still new filmmakers that know that. I mean, cause that's the thing. The films where somebody's phoning in a visual or phoning in anything, yeah, you can see it. I always use the analogy of going, which I don't know why this is where my brain goes to, but it's like going to a strip club and you get the most dead-eyed stripper. She's giving you a lap dance and she's going through all the motions and she's technically pretty, but you could just see it in her face. She would rather be eating roadkill off the road than grinding on your poor neglected lap. And to me, that's how I view like these things, is like if somebody's phoning it in, you can tell. But I think there's always new people. I mean, that's why I love the fact for the book that we have newer filmmakers in there too. You know, John did some really great chapters on It Follows and Nicholas Winton Refn's The Neon Demon. And I did, you know, well, as I mentioned before at the beginning of the show, Beyond the Black Rainbow, which is to me, one of the best films that's come out in the past 20 years. I think it's amazing. And that film is wall to wall, stunning visuals. And it's not that it has a super high budget. It's that you had a director who knew how to incorporate striking lighting, great composition, good set design, and a badass soundtrack, on top of having a lead actor in the form of, I believe his name is Michael Rogers, who gives an amazing performance. And that's all you need. Like, you just need, you know, you need some budget, of course, but vision trumps everything else.
Where are these things? We're not seeing them. With all the product that's out there, and there are still, you know, there's stations, there's a website. I mean, just hungry for, starving for more material. And all this stuff is, you know, I'll fit into that category if nothing else. Why isn't it out there? How are you mentioning these things? And I, who would like to see different, why isn't it just available?
Well, I think pretty much almost every title we cover in the book is in print, and, or at least not that hard to find. What we're doing is we're kind of pointing in the right direction. Okay. And some of these films, I mean, like, It Follows got a lot of, critical, coverage. I know it was on Netflix. It might still be on Netflix. Mm-hmm. The Neon Demon definitely got a lot of, press coverage. Some of it good, some of it not good, but that always makes for interesting reading, certainly. Mm-hmm. And Anna Biller's The Love Witch, has played a ton of festivals. I think it's out on Blu-ray. But you're right, as far as like mainstream coverage, yeah, I mean, like, you know, I could go down to the grocery store right now and, you know, Dollars to Donuts, most of the people I run into are probably going to, like, I mentioned any of these films, so then they're going to be like, huh?
Nah.
But that's why we're doing the book. I mean, like, sure. What would be, I mean, sure. I love The Godfather. I think The Godfather is one of the best movies ever made, but I don't see the point of me writing about The Godfather because everybody and their mother knows about it, or at least they should, because it is a masterpiece.
Right.
But also there's been like 8 million articles, you know, written about it.
I know that, but the fact that you bring this to people's attention is wonderful, but someone is going to look in that book, and then I guess they're going to go on a search somewhere. How are they going to find some of this stuff? I don't know how to find some of this stuff. And you've talked about things I'd love to see. I don't know where to even start looking for this stuff.
Well, I think with a lot of it, I mean, I'm trying to think of the word for it. God, I hope this doesn't sound overly here, but I mean, with some of it, I mean, you could really just Google or go to Amazon.
Okay.
With some of them, like the Flesh Trilogy, like Something Weird Video, which is an amazing site. They they've released the trilogy on DVD, and they have a lot of other of the Finlay's films too. Most of the stuff that John and I cover is out there. Everything. Everything we've covered has had some kind of release.
I totally confess to my lack of attempting or really, you know, looking into it, because I understand what you're saying. It's right. It's unfair for me to say, on one hand, look, everything's there. And on the other hand, it's, why can't I find this? You know, it's like, because you're absolutely, you're right.
But I think a lot of people go through that though. So, you know, that's why I'm glad you asked, because I think with anything that's kind of esoteric, you know, if it's not like something that's been the main thing in your world, I think that's totally natural to be like, whoa, where do I go to this land that has all of this stuff? So no, I think that's an excellent question.
Where will this book be available? Everywhere?
God willing. Yeah, no, we should definitely have it. John is on Facebook, John Skip, and as am I. And we're also both on Twitter, and we'll keep everybody up to date. The goal is definitely to have it available like on Amazon and in bookstores, definitely your local bookstores. Cause I'm all for, you know, it's going to support your local businesses, especially if they're a bookstore.
Yeah.
So just plant the seeds, and I hope everybody loves it. We're definitely proud as hell of it.
What about you in terms of, you and John are friends and what have you, and you've been involved in this book and everything? Oh, what do you have? I was going to say something that would have sounded so weird. What do you have in your drawers? What do you have hidden away in your desk? I say desk or something that is a budding, a blossoming, screenplay or something you want to do.
Oh my goodness. Well, I think most, film or music writers, I think most of us are basically like repressed directors or musicians, you know, in our hearts. And of course, I actually, when I first started writing professionally, I was a prose writer before I was nonfiction. Uh-huh. And I've had a few short stories placed. Yes. I always had much better luck with nonfiction. But
I know, because I enjoyed some of your stuff when you you've sent me stuff. I've read some of your stuff. And
you're very kind.
But in terms of film and stuff, it seems to me that with all the influence, with all the good influence you have, with all the striking thing images you have seen and the styles that you have embraced, it seems to me that if you sat down with a director or somebody who, you know, knew the other technical part of it, you could come up with a hell of a film yourself. You mean to tell me there's nothing you have hanging around, or a book of ideas or things you haven't?
Oh, trust me. I got plenty. I mean, to be honest, I'm not proud of this, because I don't recommend anybody else work like this, because it's insane and it slows your progress down very much so. But no, I mean, currently I actually have a 90 pages done on a novel. I have a screenplay, two screenplays I've started. There's also another short story that could turn into a novel or a novella. My goal is to get this finished later this year. For the past few years, I've been working on a book about the art and cinema of Steven Sadian, who's one of the most brilliant filmmakers ever, in my opinion. I love Steven's work, and I want to get that done, and I've been working on it. And so those are kind of like the big guns. You know, I'm sure like most of us, there's probably five other things in my brain that I want to work on, but for the sake of my sanity, because I feel like my grasp on it's always tenuous at best. Anyways, I won't even think about those till I get some of the other things done, of course.
Okay, because I don't think any of us are who produce art, literature, whatever. I don't think we're so secure that we even understand sometimes how good, you know, our own stuff is compared. You know, until somebody just says, "Hey, that's marvelous," and you go, "Is it?" You know, it's like, but, but I think in terms of a film, it's such a rich background of of things that you love in terms of celluloid, which is, doesn't exist anymore. Can we even say celluloid? Is that against the rules? I just think that I'm encouraging you is what I'm saying. Now, whatever those screenplays may be, I can't see how you couldn't team with someone and put together something that maybe someone else would write about in the book like yours.
Oh my God, that would be amazing. I mean, I obviously I love film and I've always had that in my heart. I mean, I think if you're a prose person at heart, that's always going to be your work. I mean, even a lot of my nonfiction, to be honest, reads like very prosy in some ways. I'm not an academic film writer by any means, and there's certainly nothing wrong with that. Like, that's kind of the cool thing, is I think there's room for everybody and different schools of doing things, but my particular school is not a school at all. It's just me doing what I do.
Recess. A school on constant recess. I know that one. Here, Heather Drain is with us and here on Cthulhu Chronicles. And I'm trying to get her to do some stuff like a screenplay. I mean, here's Johnny. Oh, okay, well, I'm just sure that whatever it is you're halfway through on these screenplays, I don't know. Do you feel like you can't live up to what you really are inspired by and love so much that you put in these books in your own screenplay? I remember Roger Ebert, who was the author of Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, right?
Indeed, indeed, as well as some of other Russ's movies.
Yeah. Okay, so he was – now, there's a guy who did the constant, would never known for that, for any of that stuff, unless you were in that particular, underground mentality and knew that kind of stuff. But he was – reviewer, and he did things in pop culture, popular stuff, and made a living that way. So, but he had, what do you feel? I can't tell you what, I can't ask you what you feel. What do you feel about that? Because I seem to be saying, how could you not have finished the screenplay? And you know this guy, John, who connected to this thing and that thing, why wouldn't you look into that?
Well, it's not that I won't. To be honest, it's sometimes it's challenging enough just juggling, getting nonfiction stuff done and having a full-time day job and having, trying to have some semblance of a life, because of course, I'm married to a wonderfully brilliant artist who and you're friends with, C.F. Roberts, and, we got our pets, we both have families, and so sometimes the fiction has had to a lot of times go on the back burner to get other things done. I mean, of course, in addition to writing, I do, I've been doing a lot of podcast work, and I imagine you and I will be more active now. You've been so patient because we've been trying to get this going for a while, but I've done a lot of appearances on Projection Booth, and I've just started a new podcast series with Kat Ellinger, who's a completely just one of my favorite film writers and just people in general. She's the editor in chief of Diabolique magazine, and which has a great website, and I've written for Diabolique, and Kat and I have a podcast called Hell's Bells, and we've got the first episode pretty much in the can, and that'll be going live pretty soon.
Well, hey, you gotta tell me all about that, and I'll keep promoting it. Where is this? Tell me now. Stop right now and tell me this information.
Okay. Well, right. The podcast is going to be called, or is called Hell's Bells. Which is a little play on a word, cause me and her, we've wanted to do something together for a long time. And, after a possibly drunken. I plead the fifth, except, we were totally, some of the best ideas come through when you're drinking, me and her were like, let's do a podcast together where we talk about music and film. And we were trying to think of a name, and Kat was like, well, let's think a badass female biker gang, And I'm like, I love it. And then she came from Hell's Bells, which is perfect because, I'm from the South and Kat is from the South. The southern part of the UK. So we're different types of Southern Belles, but she's a complete delight. And you want to talk about somebody who knows their shit with film. Kat Ellinger knows her stuff. She is way more educated, on a lot of these films than I am, but, which is why it's so awesome to work with her. I'm a firm believer in working with people that know more than you do. So that way you can kind of glean from them.
I tried that, but I can't find anybody.
Oh, you're so humble, Frank. King Cotolo.
You just let me in. You open the door, I'm gonna run in no matter what. Hell's Bells, this podcast is, Kat Ellinger is that K-A-T, isn't it?
K-A-T.
Yeah, Ellinger, yeah, Ellen was E-L-L-E-N-G-E-R.
E-L-L-I-N-G-R.
Oh, it's an I. Jeez.
And
when is this, you said you just started it, where, what, when, how, where do we see this, where do we get it, what's going on?
Well, it's going to be on Diabolique's website, and of course, Kat and I will copiously promote the living Dickens out of it on our various social medias. And we, our first episode is on some of the key film works of Radley Metzger, because Radley, you know, we lost Radley a few months ago, and me and her are huge fans of his, so we wanted to do, thought that'd be a great way to kind of start the show off, is doing a tribute to Radley Metzger.
I'm going to retweet the hell out of that. You got to make sure though that I know so I can tell people.
I will bug you about it.
Yeah, definitely.
Lovingly.
Definitely. Cause this is just one more channel of finding, of getting in touch or getting in contact with or having exposure to some of these wonderful things you're talking about that my audience or any other audience doesn't know about. And these are the things in between the breaths of all the commercial stuff that people should know about. So you gotta stay in touch with me, because whatever connection I have with these people, whoever these nut jobs are that have been listening to me all this time and still do, we gotta let them know about more of this stuff.
Hell yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and that's the thing. They can always, you know, the thing I love about social media is you can have somebody who like reads or listens to you and they'll reach out to you and they may mention something to you that you didn't know about, you know, and it's so cool.
Except I'm going to bring up now, I don't understand this and maybe you can help me with it. Linnea Quigley. Right? Now listen.
We love Linnea Quigley. I feel like you and I have talked about Linnea episode we've done together.
Well, I'll tell you why, and I'll tell you why. Because the first line she ever said in a film, I wrote. But I follow her. When I found her on Twitter, and I followed her, and I wrote wonderful little messages. I don't know. It doesn't matter that she remembered me or not, but I introduced myself and said, you know, this and the other thing. And I know all of you and I've seen your stuff. Will you be on my show? Nothing. I can't even I won't mind if someone tells me, get the hell out of my life. I'm blocking you. You know why? Cause at least it's an answer. What drives me nuts is the complete silence. And I don't leave people, well, you know, silence is a statement. Yeah, screw you. You know, just tell me something. Why can't I get Linnea Quigley on this show? And I had this, you know, I'm not going to sit here and talk about that. You know what I'm saying? I'm just thinking like, well, here's another person that, from that offbeat world and a very popular person. Why can't you? No. And then, you know, I see her Twitter thing come up and just, oh, I'm going to be on Harry Kazotsky's podcast on Thursday. And then I'm going to, yeah, well, who's Harry Kazotsky? I mean, come on. Anyway, I just thought I'd let that out because you know Linnea and we talk about her and I don't understand why she doesn't answer. Is that, does her fan president or fan club president do that? Twitter or what?
I don't know Linnea personally, so I don't, yeah, I can't speak to that. I do know, because I used to, write and work with a lovely gentleman who was friends with Linnea, and I know for several years, I think she had a problem with like a stalker, so I don't know, like it may be one of those things where she's a little like skittish, which I, you know, listen, I mean, there's some, I don't blame anybody for being skittish.
Yeah. She doesn't look skittish. Anyway, it's a bad joke. I know. I just get, I really get I wouldn't even mind if she said, if you're, you're a stalker, get, don't block me and get me the hell out of it, you know, but something. I mean, everybody deserves some kind of response, I think. But anyway, okay, let's forget about that. I don't want her on anyway anymore. That's it. You're banned.
That's not true. I would love to have you on, Linnea.
I always wanted to be on Linnea, but that's a whole other story. Listen,
that's probably why she's not.
No, stop it! stop it! What? Right? You see the movie? You see the movie she's in? How can she be? How can she feel like she can't take a joke? It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. I just thought I'd bring that up again because there are things that I continue to bring up because I have I have been writing down many of the wonderful things you've said, and then before the show is out, I'm going to get these wonderful little sayings, these little gems that you've put inside of sentences and paragraphs that I'm keeping, including Acid Jazz Batshit Collective,
which is also going to be the name of my new progressive jazz rock band.
Wow!
Everybody, keep your eye out for our tour dates.
I wanted to start a whole new trend called fake jazz. And nobody wants to do this with me. You know what the problem is? There's so many people, all my life, this is the same story. All my life, I come up with these ideas, billions of ideas, billions of ideas. And everywhere I turn, people just go like, get away from me. You know, it's like, I don't know.
Are they literally telling you to get away from
them? Yeah, you're just this weird guy. It's like, it started, you're just this weird kid, and then you're just this weird teenager, and then you're just this weird young adult, and then it's just this weird adult, and now I'm just this weird old man who doesn't want to be old, who doesn't act old. This is Cotolo Chronicles, by the way, and my fictional love, the woman who I want, I get a white horse and I want it to run over CF so I can take her away we won't hurt him. He's not come out. And, is with us again here, and Mondo Heather, still available for anybody who wants to go on there to Mondo Heather. You're still still plenty of stuff on there. What else is available on there that you that wrote that people can see? You don't have any books on there or anything?
No, the only book I've been in that's already out was I have a short story that made it into a women in horror anthology that came out last year, and if anybody's curious, please hit me up on Twitter. I'll send you a link to it. And, that was really cool. And one of the editors for that was Christine Makepeace, who, is honestly one of the best editors I've ever written for. Cause I wrote for Christine when she was an editor over at Paris Cinema magazine when they were still a print magazine, and Christine's fabulous. And, but no, I've written, actually there's a lot of my stuff on over at Diabolique. So you can definitely find my writing over there as well as, on my own site, mondoheather.com, and all kinds of other places. I've been really blessed to have stuff here and there. I'm like a dandelion seed, just trying to spread all those.
She's like a dandelion seed.
Little future dandelions out there in the field of writing.
Like a lily of the field. Sure. And let's go with the last 20 minutes we have here. Let's talk about now. We've talked about the books, talk about all this stuff, other people. Let's talk about now. But I want to know two things here. Okay. Mm-hmm. I want to know what you abhor. I know that you'll find wonderful things that you love in media and stuff like that. But right now, I want to know what you absolutely deplore, abhor, and what disgusts you that's out there that you were like, I just can't watch, listen, touch, or whatever it is that it's involved with in pop culture. What's the worst thing going on right now, in your opinion?
Oh, God. See, that's a loaded question because I'm the kind of person where if something just does not interest me and I find it repugnant, I will just avoid it. Like, I'm not one of those people, like, I don't understand trolls or anything like that.
Yeah, but you know what you find repugnant. I want names.
I'll tell you what I find repugnant.
The committee has gotten together. The committee demands names. Go ahead. I want names. Go ahead.
What I currently deplore, well, honestly, it's the things I've always deplored, which is basically, I'm far from a fan of willful ignorance. I don't like bad manners. I think if you're going to do anything in life, you should do it for like the right reasons. Like you should do it for for the heart of it. Don't be an asshole. I'm not a fan of assholes. I think most of us aren't.
What media is reflecting this stuff?
Everything.
Well, tell me. I want that, ladies and gentlemen. The committee demands name. The committee will get in order. The committee wants names.
I don't really have I would say there are key figures in our government and in fundamentalist religion. Sure. I'm not a fan of. Sure. If I'm going to start naming names, you're going to have to put a whole other hour.
Okay. Let me give you another scenario. Let me give you a scenario. You turn on your television set and you start clicking around. And when you're clicking, whatever you're clicking away from watching is something you're like, ugh, well, I know. Look, I do it. I'll mention every possible one. I'm sick of things I used to like. Okay. I mean, I'm like, but it doesn't matter. It's not about me. And I don't want to put you in a corner. If you don't want to say anything bad about anyone, then you're just on the wrong show. No, if you don't want to say anything you dislike,
the thing is, like, we don't have cable TV. Like, I think, like, more and more people, we basically have, like, a Roku. So we have instant access to things like YouTube and Hulu and Netflix. So we can kind of, like, you know, weed out the chafe or whatever.
Yeah, but they're always promoting.
The last thing I saw that really annoyed me as far as pop culture was a trailer. I can't even remember what it's called, which shows you how amazing it was, right?
Yeah.
For this Reese Witherspoon romantic comedy, which I'm not a fan of romantic comedies in general. And they just annoy me. I'm not a chick flick kind of person. I think a lot of that's honestly kind of irritating to women because it's just assuming that all women, you know, oh, that's right. We just want to fall in love with a cute boy and have babies. Woo. You know, it's just like, to me, it's like, well, where's the flamethrowers? Like, what if some of us want romance with some action? What if we want having sex off of scaffolding and setting fire to villages. I don't know. Like, where's the interesting? It just looks so fucking expected. Like, I hate things where you tell somebody's making a movie and they expect you to like it. Like, hey, you see that joke? Isn't that funny? Wink, wink, not. And it's like, fuck you. Like, I don't treat you like you're stupid. Like, I hate it. I hate media that treats the viewers like we're all stupid because not everybody's going to like my writing. And that's cool. Like, everything's subjective. Everybody's different tastes. I think that's wonderful. But, you know, at least like, you know, I will never treat a reader or a viewer like an idiot. I will never talk down to somebody like these films and a lot of this, a lot of these people do. I think it's insulting.
I knew I'd do it. Did you hear her? Did you hear her? Because she went right into that zone and she said, you had the flamethrower in your hands, didn't you? You were ready to burn them all. I love it. I love it. And you mentioned Reese Witherspoon. I love it. I love it. When you, do you think to yourselves, let me ask you, cause I don't know this. Are there ceremonies and awards given out specifically for the genres that don't ever get Oscars and things?
Well, there are, but listen, you wanted a rant. I'll give you another rant here. And this may be not popular, but I feel how I feel and I'm just going to let it know. I think awards in general are bullshit.
Yeah.
I think award shows and I hate saying that because there are people and artists I love and who have won awards and I love that. I love seeing people, celebrating artists is always a great thing. My problem with the award shows is to me, it's like student council, basically. It's just, let's be realistic. If you want to support artists, if you truly love an artist, whether they're a musician, director, actor, whatever, don't forgive him. I mean, you know what? I'm sorry. A statue is not going to pay someone's bills. Mm-hmm. Like, fucking buy their art. Support them like that, you know? Keep up with what they're doing. Go to the shows. Go to the movies. Buy the movies. Buy the books, you know? Right. Don't, if you want to support them, do that. Help them make a living doing it. To me, a statue, all of that shit is pomp and circumstance with no solid core. And, you know, if I never won an award in my life, good. I would rather have people that, you know, that hopefully connect with what I do and can help me pay a fucking utility bill than give me a statue that's going to collect dust, you know?
Bravo.
And that's how I feel. Like, if it gives joy and happiness to other people, great. I always support that, you know?
Bravo.
But me personally, I don't know. I think they're bullshit. I'm not a fan.
So there aren't any, secluded or isolated clubs or places that give like any kind of what kind of gusto. There's no ceremonial awards. There's no best. There's nothing that the under whatever's left of this underground or thing that the people celebrate in certain ways, or do you just wait?
Well, it would be a dick move for me to mention people, you know, or anything like that. I will say that, like, there are plenty of really cool, like, groups,
right,
you know, online of people that, you know, can write and share, you know, various things that are, you know, art related with each other. And I think that's beautiful. And I definitely participate in that.
Mm-hmm.
I just think instead with the awards, instead of doing some popularity contest, just plug your favorite artist's work, share what they do, you know, help them pay a bill, you know?
Well, I agree. I've been doing this for as long as this was able to be done, you know, from the beginning of this stuff. And then, you know, and I watch, I'll give you names, and I watch, you know, here and there, I'll watch some of these talk shows. It's like, I just hate what's happened to the, you know, the whole late night television thing. It's just garbage. I can't take it anymore. That's my opinion. But every once in a while, I see someone, you know, and I've been on Adam Carolla's case now for a while, because the last time I saw him, he's on, I don't know, Colbert or Fallon or Falbert or Colin or whatever their names are. And he's saying that he has an online school now, that people pay for. It tells them how to do podcasts. And, this is such cheesy crap. It's like, why are you doing that? 'Cause you need the money? Because why? Why is this stuff being done? You know, I mean, and they say, here's the king of the podcast, you know, and I'm like, hey, Adam Carolla, get on my show so I can just say, fuck you. Okay. It's like, I don't care. And I don't care anymore either, you know, because I am there too. So what I'm saying, I like your saying these things you're saying, and I enjoy them, and I've written down a lot of things.
Oh, well, cool. I hope they bring you light and love and love.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, light and love and love. And the opposite, because that helps too. Don't you find, here's what I find when writing, and I'm into a very, very big project right now, which I am not at liberty to talk about. And at the beginning of the show, I was telling everyone, telling my audience who doesn't care either, but I was saying, no, excuse me if I'm a little, it seems like I'm skipping and I'm not my usual, I don't have my usual cadence or dynamic or what have you, because and I mentioned heart, like you said, my heart is so, and my heart of hearts is so involved in this that everything else I do, you know, seems to refer back to it. That's how deeply I am involved in this thing. And so I understand what you're saying about all the stuff you're saying. And where was I going with that? Because you had said something. Because you were talking. But, oh, that's it. I know where I was going with that. And what I find is that if someone came in and said, I now gift you with all the light, and what were the three things you just told me? Light, love, I'm going to write this down too.
What? And luck.
Light, good, I like that. Light, love, and luck. If someone came in and awarded me some, I don't know, it's a fairy or a muse. How about a muse? Let's talk about a muse comes in and says, of course, if it was a Russ Meyer muse, I would definitely be distracted. But let's say a muse comes in and says, I now reward you with all the light, luck, and love you need, to get into this, to further yourself with this project or whatever. And, I think that would like, that would make me so imbalanced, because I believe that I need the darkness in me, the hate in me, and the misfortune in me to be able to pull off something that has blood, guts, and you know, a certain amount of life to it, because all of the pumping sunshine up my ass is not going to help me. I need to, you know, so I think that artists are, as I'm talking about, you know, that's why I really try to push people. And I apologize if I made you upset or I made,
no.
or felt like you were, I was cornering you, because I didn't mean to do that. But, I just think it's so important to understand all the opposites of those things to really get your total heart into something. Otherwise we'd all be what, Joel Osteen, you know, and
oh, that man has no heart.
Let's face it. When I see Joel, you know, I mean, this, like, I see Joel Osteen, and I'm not saying the guy says the most, he says things that, you know, some people love and it makes them feel good. That's fine. But I look at him and I see a noose, you know, so you can't help it. And I like, I embrace that side of me. Because I believe that when it comes to whatever I do, and it's not all, I don't even think it qualifies as art, but whatever it qualifies, I think it's important to have that a certain balance. I think a lot of the artists you talk about have that too. So when we talk about Russ Meyer being he might have been a wonder, a let me watch baseball, give me a beer and let me see some big tits. You know, he probably, and I think his art shows he's very in touch with the darker side of himself also.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's, and you know, I think what makes, you know, not even just a great artist, but a great person is, like, I think all of us have a duality within us, not to get pretentious, you know, I hope I don't sound pretentious or anything, but I think it's true. We're all like a yin and a yang, and all of us are capable of great beauty. And light and, you know, and something beautiful, but we're also equally capable of awful, of pure horror. And that's the humanity right there. That is us as a species, as we are one half beauty and magic and we're one half darkness and, you know, and horror and terror and, but I think you do have to make peace with that. I think if you repress it,
yes.
I was actually, talking with Chuck, the other day about how just like, you know, to me, like Jekyll and Hyde, it's basically, we're all Jekylls. We're all, you know, basically like we're well-meaning, curious people. But if you repress it, if you repress something about yourself, you make yourself into a Hyde. Repression is really what creates the worst monsters, in this life, in my opinion. So, you know, don't, you know, that's why you see a lot of people who will, you know, it's almost classic at this point. You know, you see a politician or a religious leader condemn, like, say, homosexuals and all that. And then they get caught in the bathroom with a 13-year-old rent boy or something like that. And, you know, and that's, you know, don't, you know, and in a way, you know, my heart hurts for anybody who can't, like, accept themselves for who they are. There's nothing wrong with being gay. You know, there's nothing wrong with being anything as long as you're not, like, hurting anybody or yourself. But the minute that you feel like that's not okay and you repress that, then, you know, it's the big ugly is probably going to come up.
Yes. We are all Jekylls. We're all, there's a Jekyll and Hyde in all of us. And, I think those are the two forces that have to make, peace with one another and also, contribute to whatever you do, because there is, we're really getting pedantic now, aren't we? We shouldn't do that.
God, I was going to say, I hope I made sense.
You
I
did, you
me,
did.
Okay, good.
Yeah, you did. And you brought me into that side of it. But I wanted to get to the bottom of that, because I didn't want, because a lot of the stuff that you're talking about, a lot of the art you're talking about is, you know, it's soulful. And if it's soulful, there's, you know, there's killing and maiming and there's reasons for it. And there's lust and as well as love. And there's, right. I mean, that's what makes, these things, And that's why when I watch, if I watch any, and I can't watch more than maybe 2 minutes of The Walking Dead, which is why when I do that, I go, what? You could all the zombies in the world and this really don't show me any feeling. I don't even see the metaphor anymore. You know, I should have had you on the time that maybe we'll do this again sometime. I did a show on zombies and it was like, and people didn't really, I guess it's, what are you going to do? Show on zombies. They didn't understand, the ones that I grew up with, the zombies I grew up with by Frank Attola. That's my new book, by the way. I want you to get it. We'll go out there and buy it. The zombies with whom I grew up. I'm trying to make it Englishly correct. Englishly correct. But the point is, that, you know, when we, I'm talking about movies and I had some YouTube help too, because they have some of these things on, you know, I walked with a zombie and they were always the voodoo black people. They were always the African American. I mean, there were no white zombies. There was a movie called White Zombie. And why was it called White Zombie? Because all the zombies were African American, right? Remember?
Well, actually, if it's still in the archives, anybody listening to this, you and I did an episode a few years ago about zombies in cinema.
See? Well, yeah, let's do that one too. Cause I did one of them. I don't know where to find it or anything, but I did this one and you did one too. Where is that?
That was your show. So I don't.
Oh, it was. You see what I'm saying?
It was a few, we have all slept since then. It was a few years ago, but it was very fun. And, I mean, I haven't seen The Walking Dead, so I don't have an opinion on it. But I'm honestly, by the time it came out, I was pretty burned out on zombies, which I hate saying because as a, you know, when I was a teenager, especially, I love zombie films. And the zombie films I love then, I still love. I mean, you know, we talk about George Romero. To me, Romero's are the best because Romero, was such a tremendously intelligent filmmaker, and he was able, you want to talk about darkness and light. The thing I absolutely adore about Romero is that he was able to make films that acknowledge both sides of the coin. Right. Like, and I mean, in a really honest, at times gritty way. I mean, often in his films, to me, the zombies are fine. It's humans that are scary,
right?
Which is very much, true to life.
Right.
And of course I do love a lot of the Italian zombie films, but you know, everybody listening, go find that old episode. You can hear me and Frank at length go into zombies,
you know, from the part of Italy where my blood flows still, we have another word for zombies. Sicilians. Just joke. Thank you. Please return for the 11 o'clock show. I'll be back. And I, you've been listening again. Look at how quickly this just flies by. It's unbelievable, isn't it?
I know. It's always like this with you, Frank, that we always, you and I just like sail right through.
I don't understand. It's terrible that most of the people I know and would enjoy having beers and talks and sit around and get high. Did I say get high? I didn't mean that. We're
high on life.
Yeah. They're just not around much. Thank you so much, Heather. And let's do some promotion. Let's stay in touch and do more promotion about this stuff, the book and everything else. And then we'll get you on again when it comes out. Maybe we could do a conference with you and John. That would be great.
I think that would be wonderful.
Right?
Let's tentatively schedule that.
Yes,
like that.
That's it. We'll be in touch about that and everything else that goes on. Thank you, dear. It's great having you on again. And I know so many people were excited that you're coming back on, and I hope we'll pass it on. I'm going to send you something special, okay?
Sounds good. And also, to all those people that were excited, your check's in the mail, but don't cash it for a little while.
There you go. Thank you, dear. Bonsoir.
Bonsoir. Au revoir.
Be in touch. Bye. Oh, did you hear that sound? That was a little crazy, huh? Heather Drain. Oh, wow. Well, I'll do that and send off to Heather Drain this thing, and maybe I'll play it next week just for fun. We'll be back. I don't know who will be on, but we'll be back, and something else will be going on then. So we leave August, and we leave pretty much the middle of the year, huh? We go into the next quadrant. Why quadrant? Because there's four seasons. That's four. Thank you, Heather Drain, once again, for just being yourself. She's all She's just a doll. She's a wonderful human being, and she makes me like human beings, which is tough. My name is Frank Cotolo. Man, his name adorns the title of the show. Go buy my books. Go look at the blogs. Go to Heather. Go to Mondo Heather and everywhere else. Go to Heather. A whole bunch of you. We'll see you soon, and we'll hear you soon. If I see you, I'll say hello. Say hello to me, too. Good night, Mrs. Ernstwell, wherever you may be located. Time is passing. Don't let it go. We'll see you then. I'll leave you now because, well, you know, I have nothing more to say.